This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details. Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
Radio. Yes, indeed. This is Mark Dolan Eats the News on FUBAR Radio, the UK's largest ad-free online radio station. In the next hour, I'll be chewing over the week's biggest stories in the company of two men who are clinically funny, Chris Betts and Doug Siegel. Boys, welcome to the studio.
Hello.
It's going to be a great show today. Beforehand, we had a kind of variety of things. There was a little bit of coffee. I think you ordered a latte, Chris. I brought some meow meow to the party, which
That's
I'm very... my producer, Abby, sourced that at a great price, so thank you, Abby. And Doug, well, you were offering crystal meth, weren't you?
Well, you say crystal meth, but really it's blue sky.
That's all it is. Yeah, and the thing is, I would say yes, I don't want to be rude, but too early for me. Too early.
Yeah, never blue before noon.
No, well, that's my motto. It's going to be a huge show today, and we've got so many big stories to get through, one of which is Thanksgiving in America has been celebrated. Let's give it up for the Americans that haven't actually committed suicide and wish them a happy Thanksgiving. Woo!
I look forward happy to becoming an institution here by probably next year.
I would have thought so. Yeah. It is Happy Thanksgiving, although since the election of President-elect Donald Trump, there wasn't a lot of thanking going on. In fact, they're thinking of renaming the festival What the Fuck Have We Done's Giving, which I think is going to stick, Chris Betts.
That's what it should have been called in the first place.
Yeah. Of course you're loving this because you are. I mean, the Canadians already enjoyed the moral high ground over the Americans for about the last 100 years just because of having a welfare state and people actually like living in buildings and stuff.
Yeah, we're into it.
Isn't it? Yeah. So, and also toddlers I believe have like guns in Canada, do they?
Did you?
Yeah.
We had rifles in my house when I was growing up.
You have more guns per capita than the States, don't you?
Yeah, but there's barely any of us. There's like a dozen Canadians.
All four of you have guns.
And you're all just too jolly and chilled out and chipper with the world to actually use those guns on anything other than an errant squirrel.
Well, yeah, we've got like old school rifles and stuff. We don't have like semi-automatic handguns.
This is the opening menu to the show, but let me just quickly throw you what would be an incredibly massive question about North American culture.
Sure.
Which is there something intrinsic in the USA and the American culture that is just inherently more sort of warmongering, more militaristic, more fighty, more pugnacious than the Canadians? Why is there more killing in America than Canada? Because Canada has poor people too.
We do. They started off fighting. Mm. We didn't. We just waited. We just sat politely and we're like, oh no, England will free us one day.
The difference between your two great nations is patience.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. They're the rebellious older brother who like left and joined a punk band when he was addicted to crack in his 20s and stuff.
Right.
And we're like, we're the accountant younger brother who saw all that.
I have a theory.
The
problem is Hollywood. The problem is Hollywood. They perceive everything through the prism of a Hollywood movie.
Yes.
So everything is guys in white hats and black hats, and you solve problems with your fists and guns, and... Nobody's ever told them the real world's not like that.
Well, it's funny you should say that, Doug Siegel, top comedian, comedy mind reader, and general man. But also, I read an interesting article in The Independent Online, and I've never said that sentence before. And it said, it was ridiculous, it was the biggest waste of column inches you've ever seen, but I like the angle, and in a way it chimes with what you said. There's a theory that American movies are going to be better now that Trump's in. Because you can just have totally out there plots, and it's just going to be, you know, it's going to be macho. It's going to be like back to Rambo and, you know, machine
like
guns
stuff,
and all that, helicopters. It's all going to...
Because what people are really tired of is plots that make sense.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're tired of experts. We're tired
to
of
quote the great Michael Gove.
Yes, we're tired of experts. We're tired of sense. We're tired of empathy.
I mean, there is something to be said for. I mean, Reagan was an awful man, but the movies that came out in the '80s had something to them. There was something to them.
Right. You have Donald Reagan. There's a Freudian slip.
Oh, that's a terrifying thought. Imagine the two of them fused together.
That's a monster that even James Cameron wouldn't create.
That'd be like the most horrible human centipede ever.
It would be like a barrage
in between them.
It'd be a very intolerant homophobic sexist man who's also forgetful.
Mm. But did have a pet monkey,
if only he could forget how homophobic and sexist he was, then we'd be nailed it.
I can tell you that it's funny you should mention his pet monkey, Doug Siegel. Mm. It's almost like we've put this show together in advance.
Almost.
But not quite. By the way, I rolled into the studio at what could only be described as 1 minute past 12. But you know, I don't feel guilty because it's not like anyone here has driven from Norwich to be on the radio.
this cowboy.
Yeah. So archway to this studio, I can't tell you how short a distance it is.
What I love is that you've come on your motorbike too, haven't you?
Yeah, I've even come on a device that's famously traffic-proof.
And what I loved about that was the way you sort of stripped off your outer motorcycling gear to reveal a velvet jacket. It's like the weirdest inverse Batman ever.
It is basically, I'm a superhero that just wants to be a guy that lives in a cave. I must check with the manservant wherein the relationship is ambiguous. You know something. So you've come here from Norwich. You're very welcome. So I just want you guys to know, listening, not only are we dealing with premium comedy talent, in the long term, in a longer sense of it, Chris Betts, you have basically flown in from Canada.
Sure, if you want to. It was a long 4-year wait for the show, but
we're doing, my father smuggled me over in his genitals from Russia. So,
Yeah, I've heard about your dad.
The famous drug mule.
That
expanding scrotum of heroin.
An awful lot of goods have been transported in your father's scrotum, I can tell you. I have the war stories to tell you. So you've raised something here, which is Ronald Reagan, who had a pet monkey. We discussed that. And the thing is, there's been a great line of American icons that have owned pet monkeys. Michael Jackson, Ronald Reagan. They're all brilliant people. However, I think that if Donald Trump had a pet monkey, he'd probably put it in charge of, I don't know, foreign policy. Hashtag satire.
Oh, yes. Very good.
Really, yeah.
Not funny, but a good point.
Yeah, very good point. I think, to be fair, he's got Farage, isn't he? Which is like...
That'll do.
Farage shares 98% of his DNA with both monkeys and us humans.
I think you're absolutely... Please don't insult the monkeys. So here's the thing, and I will get to this point, which is that Donald Trump, and this is another big story of the week, is going to be the first president in something like 200 years to not have a pet. Did you know that?
Really?
Yeah, he's not going in with a pet. Although I would say his hair has pet-like qualities. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's almost prehensile, isn't it?
Well, it is a bit.
In the way it sort of scoops forward.
Can I just, one moment. I know we're in the middle of a radio show. It's live. It is the UK's largest ad-free online radio station. Our record number of hits in a week has been 500,000 people.
Ooh. So,
but I'm still going to stop all of that and just write down the word prehensile.
What you don't know is that he's doing it using his prehensile feet.
Not only has Doug Siegel...
That would be impressive.
Doug Siegel, rhymes with eagle, has come in from Norwich, which we know that America is further away from this studio than bloody Norwich.
Is it culturally?
Well,
though,
there's no
really?
Big train. There's no, definitely not culturally.
Culturally, we're next door.
Not satisfied with coming from East Anglia, which is, I think, technically the oldest part of England
in terms
of civilization.
Is it?
Yeah,
I've certainly Sutton Hoo. So Sutton Hoo, you know what Sutton Hoo is?
I've met her actually, and she's a good person.
Sutton Hoo is the big kind of it's the European Valley of the Kings. It was a big burial mound they found. In Suffolk.
All right.
Very, very famous. If you saw the grave goods, you would recognise them. Mm. It's like in the way that Tutankhamun's mask is famous, the sort of helmet they found is famous. Mm. And the guy that discovered it was an amateur archaeologist, and he lived in the house next to me.
That's remarkable.
It's wonderful, isn't it? My house used to be a tea shop and a sweet shop. Yeah. And I like to think that Basil Brown used to come in for a bag of gumdrops and a scone.
Well, I like to think so. I also like to think that your house has always like a bit of a sweet shop slash. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because you're like.
Are you basically accusing me of being a paedophile? Is that what you're saying?
You do seem to have an awful lot of Hornby train sets in your house. Scalectric. You it's hate Scalectric. I went for dinner at their house, and there's like a basketball. You don't like any of this stuff.
I don't like any of it. No, it's all lures. I'm essentially a 21st century child catcher.
Oh, I pictured like a Home Alone style like booby traps. I thought that's how you had Scalectrics dropping buckets of water on would-be robbers.
Amazing, wouldn't it?
Now I can also tell you it's been a big week for retail sales, because Black Friday, which we know is probably the biggest myth in retailing, has once again captured the public's imagination, and it enjoyed record sales. In fact, retail sales week on week went up by 38%, which is hashtag insane. But I quite like the Black Friday. Interestingly, UKIP have a Black Friday too, but it's a different kind of event. Now, the other thing I want to say is that, do you know what? I've done that joke so many times, but it always gives me pleasure. I don't know why. It just warms the cold of my heart.
It's one of the ones you do for you, isn't it?
Yeah. It's just for me, really. Yeah. It's definitely not for you guys. I can notice that. And finally, Jeremy Clarkson is back on TV. Of course, the former star of Top Gear has returned to Amazon Prime with James May and Richard Hammond in the Grand Tour. And I don't know if you guys have watched it. Have you guys watched it?
No. I was too busy sandpapering my eyes.
Yes. Well, the thing is, you know, I want to be fair. I gave it a chance, you know. But it's really weird because my wife came in when it was on, and so I quickly changed the channel to pretend I was watching hardcore pornography. Mm. Just so well, embarrassing.
It's less shameful, isn't it?
Do you know what I mean? It's like using a copy of Mayfair to hide your Daily Mail. And by the way, there's a reference for the teenagers.
Yeah everybody. Yeah.
Do they even have that? Are those guys still in business?
Do they even have bushes where you find copies of Mayfair anymore? Because that's where
you're kidding me.
Oh, is Mayfair like your softcore porn? Is that Playboy?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, cool.
So basically, pornography was never actually published in like the 80s and 90s ever. Yeah. But it just spontaneously bloomed underneath bushes near schools and recreation grounds.
The word bush is an unfortunate choice of noun in this context. Doug Siegel. And
I think it's fair to say that 80s porn was all about the bush, wasn't it?
That was a beautiful thing. Yeah. And like really, really sort of fuzzy lighting. Really uncomfortable.
Very true.
These ladies aren't as pretty as you want them to be. Let's fuzz this up a little bit.
And on the fuzzy vagina, what we'll do is we'll play a sting which tells you what this is, and then it starts. Thanks.
Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
Now, there you go, boys. We don't have the comfort blanket of... Welcome to Alan Partridge, Mid-Morning Matters. We don't have the comfort now of a music bed underneath what we're saying. Now, I don't know if you noticed that, but the tradition of radio is that for your opening menu, it's the kind of light-hearted taste of what's about to come, which is enough to pique the audience's interest to make them skip that work meeting or whatever it is that they had planned from 12 till 1, and it's just going to be us. I am confident that we've delivered on that. I think we've promised massively.
That's a box ticked, isn't it?
It is really, big time. Now, I'm confident also in the ability of both of you to continue to make this happen, but the challenge is, the headwinds that are affecting us now is no music bed underneath the hilarity.
I see that. We can improvise, can't we?
I think I
do you play any spoons?
You go, Mark.
All right, well, it's... Radio 2, if there was no music beds, the careers would just be over.
Good point.
Because it props it all up. But we at FUBAR Radio, we don't do that. We don't need that. The music, the melody, is the kind of comedic cadence that comes from Chris Betts's Canadian... tongue.
I see that.
And from your rich face, Doug
Siegel.
To be
fair, you are the only... this show should be rebranded as three bespectacled men and two beards.
Yeah, it's a good point.
It's a very long title. Mm.
It's a nice one, isn't it?
Before we start, we're going to discuss the government's plan for Brexit, which will take, I think, about 10 seconds. But let's have a look at the... I'll just describe because it's the radio. I'm clean shaven. Now, you guys might think, oh, look at that. You're quite professional. He's got a broadcasting appearance. He's had a shave. No, this is just like not shaving for a month. Nothing. Puberty is still, pending. But I look at the two of you, proper, not just beards, but like rich man beards.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that we could be equally at home in the woods, in the outback of Australia, or any bear bar in gay Britain.
I'll big spoon somebody. Yeah. I don't care, yeah.
I've got to say, I know that you are both vigorously heterosexual, but all I'm saying is what a waste.
I know, right?
Yeah. Stupid girlfriends.
Yeah.
You've got a full head of hair, though. Doug,
stupid
have you got,
girlfriends.
Oh, yeah.
How you bagging?
Oh, yeah. I'm plenty handsome. Look at that.
Siegel has too much
flowing
hair.
Flowing locks.
I put
this on just so that I wouldn't intimidate you both.
God damn it. I had a bald spot when I was 23, so it's like, my grandpa told me that the way that you get a beard is you start pulling on the hairs on your chin, and it's connected to the hair on top of your head, and so you pull it out. And
thanks, Grandpa.
People that are bald are people who just pulled too far. And now, he was right. That's what I'm trying to say.
I heard your... this is your grandfather, wasn't it?
This is my grandfather.
Took his own life at the age of 51. But listen. And everyone's like, 51. He had a good innings.
He had a great run.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Good luck
to him. I think you find in Canada, they usually make them president at 51, don't they?
Oh, I thought you were going to say age in dog years, which is closer to the truth.
You've been in the UK so long now that, Chris Betts, you are British, as far as I'm concerned. What I love about this country, I hope anyway, what I hope I love, and also especially London, is I've got a little theory, which is, you know, how do you become a Londoner? And I would say that when you arrive, when you achieve accommodation and some kind of income, even if it's an occasional gig somewhere, basically income, accommodation, you're a Londoner.
No. As an Indigenous Londoner.
Help me out with that.
As an Indigenous Londoner, I disagree.
Throw it in.
Right, so income, accommodation, complete disdain for your fellow human beings. That makes you a Londoner.
It's a good point.
If you're still making eye contacts on the tube, you're from Sheffield.
Yeah. If you introduce yourself to just like a stranger at a ticket office, we're taking you down.
Yep.
Yeah. Because that is not what this city is about.
Cold heart.
I knew I was officially a Londoner when someone said there's a delay because there's a person under the train, and I sighed and looked at my watch.
Yeah, that's the spirit.
That was the one. And I happened to know that person was your sister, Beryl. And
Beryl? What kind of family do you think I'm from? Beryl.
Because I was improvising, I was in such a hurry to find a name. And I'm 42, so and the brain just isn't quite as...
Beryl
if I'd gone for that joke at 25, I would have gone for, like, Stephanie or something.
Oh, yeah.
But, you see, I've had time now
classic
to think.
North American name.
But yeah. Beryl, because your sister who went under a train was actually 93.
Yeah.
So...
I mean, she sucked Grandpa's life force and just went for it.
I heard.
I'm so sorry. It's awful when that sort of thing happens in the family.
No.
See, this is why Beryl...
The old Doug, the young eat the old.
This is why Beryl and your grandfather had such a good marriage, because she sucked your grandfather's life force. And it was a great party trick. She learned it at college. She never lost the hang of it.
Yeah, we say college. We mean Moose Hunter.
I think we do.
Yeah. Now, hooray for racial stereotypes!
Yay. Well, exactly right. So, speaking of racial stereotypes, so you are a Londoner now. By the way, the cross-reference to my theory about London, and I like your contributions further to my little idea, is this. Paris, one of the most beautiful cities in the world. Mm-hmm. But any one of the three of us could live there for 50 years and still we would not be a Parisian.
True that. Mm.
And maybe that's also the magic of Paris, by the way, because it is so wonderfully, undilutedly French, and that's good. Let's talk briefly about what the Canadians think of the Americans having elected Donald Trump, because you must be laughing.
Well, they just made a huge mistake, that's all. That happens. I get it, because like 95% of Canada is rednecks.
Mm.
And so I'm always amazed that we don't vote for one of those guys.
Yeah.
Because when you hang out in small towns, those are the people that I grew up with. Yeah. Like, these are all people who...
Are they right-wing? Are they right-wing?
Full-on right-wing.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. My dad was right-wing. Like, most of my friends back home are like left-wing in sensibility, but right-wing in voting.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean, though?
So they're like, they don't have any hate in their heart. They just have a bunch of dumb thoughts that they haven't gotten rid of yet that are left over from their racist parents.
Is that because, maybe, I'm just guessing, that maybe your right-wing parties in Canada are like ours used to be back in the 70s when they were just about sort of fiscal responsibility rather than actively hating anyone that they can pin stuff on?
Yeah, there's a lot of that. Yeah. And also, our left-wing party doesn't push anti-hate quite as strongly as they do in the States. And so it's just kind of if you want to hate someone quietly, you just do what you want to do.
live and let live in hate. That's what we say.
If you want to love someone, that's great. If you want to hate someone, that's great too. You just do it on your time. Don't worry about it.
But I mean, I'm wondering whether there are flaws in the actual electoral process in Canada, maybe even corruption or some issue with the count. Because how it is that 80% of a country that's rednecks elects someone called Justin.
I know, right?
Oh, that's a really common redneck name.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. Back home, that's like, dude, Justin's
that
drive
proper trucks. Proper trailer trash name.
Big trucks. These guys, Justin Trudeau has done more than a few chest bumps. That's a guarantee. He's like he's a keg stand champion somewhere.
I really love the fact that kind of everybody was swooning for Trudeau.
He's beautiful.
He's beautiful. He has beautiful thoughts. And then this week he came out and said, I think Castro may have been the most wonderful person alive. And everyone went, what? What? The Castro that kind of tried to get rid of gays and all this sort of stream of things. Because guess what? People are flawed and multidimensional.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
When he was doing the gay stuff, which was obviously horrific, so was every other country.
Exactly right,
that was when Britain was like damning Alan Turing.
Yes.
And also what happened in defense of Castro is that he was very obviously misguided, and it was terrible when he was, you know, the public policy was a homophobic one and people were thrown in jail and everything. And he just had a meeting with his colleagues and they said, you do realize, El Presidente, that Elton John's gay. He's like, Elton John? Really? A Tiny Dancer, such a good song. I mean, don't go breaking my heart. That can't have been about a man.
No.
Nikita, that's a woman's name. What you talking about? Graham Norton is gay, but he's so funny.
See, what's weird about that is I'd always imagine the young Fidel Castro being played by Liam Neeson because he looks a lot like Liam Neeson.
That's a good point.
But you've just sense. Demonstrated ably how well he could be played by Gary Coleman from Different Strokes.
What you talking about, Willis?
That's what you're talking about. That's a versatile Castro vibe that you're talking about. He's all over the place. He's whatever you want him to be.
So basically, Canada is gloating.
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
I know you're not there, and that's why I said I kind of prefaced it with you're a Londoner now. But you probably keep an eye. Do you keep an eye on the Canadian press?
Yeah. And it's more like we kind of because we're right next to them. So there's a general fear of whatever they're going to do. Because if someone bombs them, then we get hit.
Yeah.
92% of our population is within 50 miles of the United States border, and so that's from like old trade routes and stuff. But excuse me. So there's And it just affects everything to us because we're connected at the teat.
Yeah.
We're part of the states, like, economically, essentially. So if he screws them, we go down, too. So we're terrified.
And then trade, of course. I mean, America must be your biggest trading partner.
Yeah, by a long shot. I mean, the EU is second. But yeah, America is huge because NAFTA.
Has he made some mood music, Donald Trump, in the direction of Canada? Has much been said about Canada? I mean, there's no...
I don't think he's mentioned
this. I don't think he knows it exists. I think he hears the accents and just assumes that's America too.
Well, I think he's had so many lackeys his whole time that he's like, yeah, I know how lackeys work. You're going to do what I tell you to do. And we're like, yeah, he's right. He's absolutely correct.
Because I've heard there's talk of a wall between America and Canada, but that the Canadians are building it.
Yeah. Oh, good luck on that one.
Every citizen, they're like, how much money do you want? No problem. Let's do this.
I think what you actually want is you want a wall at the Canadian border, a wall at the Mexican border, a wall all around the coastline of the intercontinental United States, and then a tunnel between South America and Canada. And then everyone's happy.
And New York and LA. If we can take those.
Okay, we have those bits. That'd be cool.
Do you know what? You would have, there would be more Mexicans in Canadian restaurants, which means service would be quicker. Because eating out in Canada, you've got to, you know, you really got to think ahead. You've got to clear a week to get a steak.
We sit there in the waiting room and we're like, God damn it, where are our goddamn Mexicans? Because
I did do this sort of slight gag about Brexit going, you know, this anti-immigrant sentiment is a bad idea because the last thing we want in this country is English people making our food again.
Damn right.
Because you won't have been here, but Douglas remember.
It was a dark, dark time.
They
boiled
everything,
time.
Wasn't it? Everything was boiled.
Essentially, everything was boiled except for the bits that were deep fried. But not in a good Scottish way, in a kind of lukewarm oil kind of way.
Shocking.
It was sort of boiling in oil, really, wasn't it?
It was quite amazing. You were absolutely right.
Didn't your minister, like, quote Rowan Atkinson by accident, where he's like, well, we've got the recipe for curry. We don't need these people anymore. It was like a real MP.
The fact that Boris Johnson is using Prosecco sales as a negotiation tool.
Let's discuss that, idiots. Doug Siegel, because we have a very amusing story in today's... every single paper is covering this one.
You say that, but what I've got in front of me is just printouts from the Mail Online. Essentially, what you've done here, Douglas, you have set back the Don't Fund Hate campaign by about 5 years.
We enjoy a relationship with the Mail Online here at FUBAR Radio. They bankroll our business to the tune of £8 million a week.
And do they?
I just think it's...
Do they now?
Do you know what? I
used to work with Jonathan Harmsworth.
Now, who is Harmsworth?
Jonathan Harmsworth is the bloke that owns Northcliffe Newspapers, but owns the Daily Mail.
Oh, dear.
He is Lord Rothermere.
He's got harm in his name.
I know, right? So here's the weird thing, right? Are they really your main sponsor?
No, I wish they were, though.
Oh, okay, that's a shame.
We'd all listen.
I was about to bring your station down. Right, so Harmsworth...
If we had him as our sponsor, you guys would have arrived today in Addison Lee cars.
You're not wrong.
And we would actually be having Meow Meow and Crystal Meth.
I used to work for them. And when I did work for them, Jonathan Harmsworth was learning the ropes. And I was working at the Evening Standard at the time. And he was made... managing director, I think, of the Evening Standard by Daddy. And he was all right. We shared a desk. He sat out on the floor with us in open plan office. And for 6 months, I shared a desk with this man. And he was okay. You were very much aware. Mm. He was the boss's son. You were very much aware of his privilege. Mm. But he was a nice enough guy. He got his round in, you know. And
he'd come in and he'd go, how was your weekend?
Exactly. The day his father died, He disappeared upstairs to, at the top of the offices in Derry Street, there is the old wood-panelled suite of rooms from the old place in Fleet Street, which they moved over sort of panel by panel.
Wow.
And it's all done out. It's like a Bond villain's lair, which is not inappropriate.
Harmsworth.
And he disappeared up there, never to be seen again. And the next thing you saw was an email from him saying, basically, I'm in charge now. I'm running this. Signed, Rothermere.
Oh,
and it's like he just turned into a Bond villain overnight.
Wow. That's really, really strange, isn't
it's
it?
Really,
I mean, I feel like
horrifying.
The clues must have been there. Were you ever sitting at the desk and he was like, so you hate any Muslims this week?
No.
What are you doing this
week? I swear to God, he seemed all right.
Yeah.
And whereas, you know, I mean, again, I used to work for Rupert Murdoch at one stage as well, and I've met Murdoch many, many times. And he was patently an out-and-out cunt. And thank you, Fubo, for allowing me to say that.
You're so allowed to say that.
Oh, good. I've been not cunting.
Oh, cunt away!
Excellent.
Do you feel that it's been very... Your performance is very under-cunted.
Oh, thank you. I'm gonna over-cunt just to redress the balance now.
Please
the
do.
The cunting
never
balance.
Never knowingly under-cunted.
And on that note...
That's a great name for a show.
And after what has been 3 minutes of undiluted libel... Anyway, I really did enjoy working here, and it's been FUBAR Radio. It's been a brave experiment that just ended.
Rupert Murdoch pushed my sister Beryl in front of that train, for the record. He's
correct.
The one that did it.
I've got a Murdoch story, too, if you'd like
right,
to hear
Right, so
it.
We've got all after a record. We've got Murdoch story. We're going to... Basically, what happened is that someone walked into a meeting at Number 10 with their notepad open, and someone zoomed in, and we have Britain's plan for Brexit, which is no plan. But we'll get to that, and lots more tittle-tattle. We're also going to look at a story in which migrants are taught how to attract women and sexually arouse them in German seminars. I need to be at that seminar. Also, Anton Deck faced a backlash after doing a stereotypical joke about Australians. I'll be asking the boys, is it funny, and also is the joke racist? A woman is jailed for 4 years in China after live streaming herself participating in an orgy. I mean, is nothing private anymore? And the coldest handshake ever, Obama and Putin barely brush palms as they fail to disguise their animosity. How much does a handshake matter? And also, how do you generally, what is the etiquette of how to greet people these days? I find it a minefield. It's TV's Mark Dolan, TV's Doug Siegel, TV's Chris Betts. We are back after Arcade Fire, City with No Children. We'll be right back.
Radio.
There'll be more talking by men after this thing, which that's the plan. But then there's this 30-second thing. It's called a trail, and it's basically a description of another show that isn't this one, but which is also very good. I would say that it's on the same level. It's just it's a different thing. Do you know what I mean? We're not in competition.
Well, aren't you?
Yes, we are. That's why I've done a long preamble, just to kill it stone dead.
FUBAR Radio presents...
on paper.
Jordan Henderson's goal.
Phenomenal.
Was a bit special, wasn't it? I mean, I do not rate Jordan Henderson. For me, he's like that girl who you see from a distance and you think, oh yeah. And the closer they get, the more you regret that. Right? Until you get right up close and you go, oh fuck, it's Jordan Henderson.
Every Tuesday. From 9 p.m. on FUBAR Radio. Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
It's FUBAR Radio in the company of Chris Betts, top comedian. Chris Betts, top comedian. Doug Siegel. Doug, we call you a comedian. You also have a great creation, which is the comedy mind reader. So I don't know whether the word comedian is a sufficient word for you.
Yeah, I'd sooner go with that than just mind reader, because that opens up kind of people. You start to. I mean, my act is I'm a comedy mind reader, and that's because I'm not funny enough without it. So it's kind of my shtick.
We've all got our crutch.
Did you get your start by reading that on the faces of your audience?
Hey!
Every comedian's got their crutch. You know, you've got that angle. Chris Betts has his smoking hot good looks.
Yes, that's a good point.
That's I just flex
and
for 20
regional
minutes.
Accent. Yeah.
That's the plan.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, people love foreigners here. That's the one thing I've learned about England. Nothing more popular than an immigrant.
You're really seizing the Zionists there, aren't you?
Now, I was going to... speaking of foreigners, let's quickly do a bit on Brexit. What's happened is that one of the team that's negotiating Brexit has walked into Number 10, and they've done that thing, and it happens every so often, which is that a telephoto lens zooms in on what looks like a hand-scribbled note, and in fact, it's quite classified government, detail about the Brexit plan.
Why is it never a badly drawn penis?
It's a very good point.
If it was my books,
that'd be
yours?
Great. I'd be so delighted.
Just doodles all the way. Yeah,
I made my day.
Or just the word fish over and over again.
Yes. Or what about it's a phone number. It's like 07938779482, and then it's just like Miss Lady Whiplash.
For a good time, call.
What I don't understand is if they have telephoto lenses that are good enough to pick up the hand-scribbled notes of a person carrying a book under their arm. Mm. Why do we need this new surveillance law?
It's a good point. Just basically, you get Fleet Street on the case.
Yeah.
Just send the photographer down. Just send this wizened old hack from the Daily Express, an 83-year-old photographer with his Nikon.
All their greasy people.
Yeah, if we can find Kate Middleton's tits from a mile away, I'm sure we can bust up a terrorist plot.
Why that guy wasn't deployed to find the weapons of mass destruction,
right?
We'd never have had the Iraq war.
It's way clearer than those satellite photos in the UN.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, they're
just
obviously
not using our resources correctly.
There isn't. I mean, the government, by the way, and I'm in no mood to Abby, senior producer executive of the show, has brought in coffee. Thank you. Very appreciated.
Thank you.
Have any idea once, and I've said this before, that Abby, once she's at the BBC, when she's in charge,
inevitably,
she will remind us.
Why do you think I've been grovelling?
Do you know what I mean?
It's just a matter of time.
I can't wait to bring Abby coffee one day.
Yeah, that's what's going to happen.
I guarantee. It's a guarantee that's going to happen.
I give it 6 months.
Yeah.
So, I think clearly there is no plan for Brexit.
What a surprise.
Between a rock and a hard place, aren't we? I mean, I'll ask you, Doug. What we've got is Doug, Indigenous British man, and then we have new arrival, basically a Canadian who can once again laugh at another country that's screwed up their own fate.
So sweet to be me.
A really good year. But here's the thing, Doug. You've got Brexit. If you want, what we want is this, and the quote on this bit of paper, this scrawl bit of paper is, the plan is have our cake and eat it. Right, that's basically what we want.
You see, well, I think that might actually be literal. I think that might literally be the government's plan is the Women's Institute. That's how we are going to trade with the rest of the world. We're going to bake cakes because we've got the Women's Institute, right? Bake cakes and jam, trade those. So we're going to eat those cakes because we're not going to have the imports anymore. So we're just going to eat those cakes and sell them. So we're going to have our cakes and eat them.
Foreign Minister Mary Berry.
Is the plan.
I think Mary Berry just dispatched to Brussels.
Yeah.
That's sorry, with Boris, Paul Hollywood out. on his motorbike.
That's the plan, isn't it? Yeah.
Mel and Sue doing quirky puns outside the European Parliament.
I think I love that.
Just going, oh, I hope they don't make a boob of it.
Your economic plan is the same as a seven-year-old trying to get away on a football trip.
And also,
we're going to have a lemonade stand next outside Downing Street, aren't we?
Car wash.
What I really like, and this isn't my thought, I
want the negotiation to happen in a tent.
Oh, that would be amazing.
And I want all of the negotiators not to be civil servants, but just to be like an old lady from like Suffolk who's, you know, just going to do her best.
Yeah.
The great to negotiate
British,
a defence policy.
British Brex off.
How is that now happened?
I'm going.
And on that bombshell, wow, work is that?
The big headache at 12:41 is when you hit a level like that, where do you go?
That's it.
What we're going to do, the solution is to play 20 minutes of early Elton John just to calm ourselves down.
While in the background, Gary Coleman doing an impression of Fidel Castro going,
what are you talking about, Willis?
Oh, I don't care if anyone else is enjoying it. We're having a lovely time.
Candle in the Wind is a great song. He can't be gay.
He said he kissed the bride.
Good reference to a 1983 single from the Too Low for Zero album.
Encyclopedic knowledge of Elton John.
Yeah, it was overshadowed by two other bigger hits. I guess that's why they call it the blues. And
please don't be wham. Please
I'm
don't be wham.
Still standing.
Okay, good.
Now, so okay, let
what
me
just say
help
your
you
favorite
out.
Pair of Elton John glasses are.
Oh, that's an outstanding question. It's got to be you associate the best look with the best creative period.
Okay,
so I think you're looking at the bigger glasses from 1973-74.
The Yellow Brick Road period.
We've got a great statistic of the Yellow Brick Road, correct. Mm-hmm. So he did have a pair of mink-lined glasses for a while.
Amazing.
Which is a great achievement that's like obviously very wacky, the scale of them, but also to manage to get glasses that are cruel.
Yeah. Pretty impressive.
Going somewhere. That's
super impressive, yeah.
How can there be pain involved in the production of these glasses?
My mom had glasses that were made out of like bison horn.
Wow,
and
that's impressive.
And she was like, yeah, but they take them really sustainably. I'm like, yeah, I'm sure they saw the bones off of that animal really, really carefully, really lovingly.
They grew back.
I love your hardcore redneck mum as well. She cuts quite a figure, I've got to say.
So. What's the largest animal you've shot? Come on, you've shot animals.
Oh, man.
I bet you had.
No, I never did. My dad wanted to take me hunting, and my mom stopped him from doing it.
Wow. Yeah, despite, she obviously didn't need glasses at that point, did she?
No, I mean, yeah, if she wanted to look stylish, that was, and she would have known. But
yeah, she's just like, these will be useful one day.
Yeah, store them in the box with the other stuff, the paper clips and the screws that we don't know what they're for. Put them in there. We'll find use for these bison horn one day.
So it's just a mound of dead bison in the back of your mother's garden.
Yeah,
just like a big pit.
I think that's called a barbecue.
I think you're right. It's true. That's just lunch in Canada.
Oh, yeah. Bison's delicious. Have you ever eaten bison?
No.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah,
is it really tough?
Good. I would imagine it was tough.
No,
no, it's really good. Really
tender.
Good. Yeah, really.
How do you
tender.
Cook it? Can you just cut it up and grill it, or does it need to be tenderized?
Just cut it down the middle, and then just about 4 hours on each side.
Wow.
Yeah, you Flintstones it. Yeah.
Spooky. So, there's no plan for Brexit, but here's my question. What we clearly want now that we've got Brexit is we want to, listening to the people, which is always a mistake, but you have a control of borders whilst being in the single market and not under the jurisdiction of the European courts.
There's it isn't my thing. It's a meme that's been floating around. It's someone else's. It's Twitter post, I think, but basically someone said that the argument is this. So Brexit leavers, so what do you guys want? This is all crazy. What we want perfect conditions where we get to keep all the benefits and then have no truck with them at all. But that's impossible. Well, we're voted, so you have to make it possible. But it's impossible. Why are you asking us to? Shouldn't it be your job? No, you're the experts. But I thought you hated experts. No, that's Remain experts. Leave experts. We love them. And round and round and round.
Correct, and in a weird way, we're still in the same pickle we were before the vote even happened. The bottom line is, clearly those that voted for Leave were sold a lie, because it would be like, well, it'll be like this, but we'll control our borders. And I must say, I didn't think I'd quote David Cameron as a source of wisdom on this, but in one of the hustings debates before the Brexit vote, and in his defence, I mean, he was a silly sausage in the extreme for calling the referendum.
That's the most British way of saying that.
Did you not think that next time we do a referendum, we should actually define what it is people are voting on first?
Well,
just
that's
a
right.
thought.
Yeah, it wasn't very well framed. The idea of it anyway, I think we've learned the hard way that referenda are a really bad idea. You're better off just having elections where the party can stand on a platform of, here's what we'll do.
Almost like a representative democracy like
Thank
we've
you.
Had for the last
Thank
like,
you.
However many hundred years.
I think referendums are a good idea sometimes, and I think this was a good idea to have a referendum for this, but I think that it was weird that you had a 50+1% win on it, because every national referendum, like in Canada, it's got to be 66% of the national population,
and
then 2/3 of the population of each individual province.
Yeah.
So that the more population heavy ones can't vote out
and
vote
what
the
you're
rest
voting
of them.
For is
so
apart
really
from Quebec,
fine.
You don't listen to those idiots, do you?
No, they vote in French, so we just throw it in the garbage. But
oh,
so it's so Cameron said the following. He said, do you really think we're going to get a better deal outside the EU than the one we've currently got in it? Ish don't think so. And he was right. But the problem, I think, with the whole movement on the old Remain thing is that the only significant political leader that was pushing for Remain was the Prime Minister, who, and we always know this is the case, any incumbent is always unpopular.
Yeah.
So you can't have that person being the salesman. And so you're like, oh, well, maybe Jeremy Corbyn can help. Mm. Maybe not.
Yeah, maybe that's not really what he wants to happen. Mm. Yeah.
Correct. So here we are. What do you think's going to happen, Doug? Because we're between a rock and a hard place.
Well, can I first say that I'm interested you brought up David Cameron, because I'm personally nostalgic for when... For those days when in terms of you looked at the leader of a major Western country and you thought, the worst thing I can imagine him doing is putting his penis in a disembodied pig's mouth. Wasn't those wonderful days?
Man, those halcyon days.
That was the halcyon days. Well, we're screwed. I think...
Thanks for reminding us about that. I'd only just forgotten.
I feel better. Yes. I feel better.
I hope you're enjoying your lunch, guys.
There are only two possible outcomes, aren't there? We're either... We do a hard Brexit, either forced on us or voluntary. Mm.
Which is going to hurt every industry.
Yeah, we're absolutely fucked. Yeah. Because trade deals, if you have trained negotiators, take decades.
Yeah.
Not a couple of years, decades. Not 10 years, decades.
Yeah.
And we don't have trained negotiators. And... We have, in terms of, I mean, I used to work in the business world, and I've been on negotiation courses, and you have to actually have something to negotiate with, right?
Mm.
Seemingly, what we have is not buying Prosecco, jam and cakes. That's all we've got. We've destroyed our manufacturing base. There is no reason for the service industry, which is the core of our economy these days, to stay here. They're only here because of legislation, and that legislation can change like that because the Europe can go, do you know what?
Big business knows no loyalty.
Exactly right. So what exactly is it we think we're trading with? You know, our economy is huge, but it's huge because it's a service economy, and that service economy is completely transient. We manufacture nothing. We have no core commodities with which to trade. So either we're left fucked because we just come out, or what we end up with is all the things that are bad about the EU as conditions, and the things that, let's not call them racists, but the people that were concerned about immigration.
Those are racists.
Right? Yeah, we're not allowed to call them racists anymore because apparently that forces them to vote for racist things.
Well, I'm not
it's
here,
our
so
fault that we call them out on their racism and then they have no option but to vote in a racist manner. Right?
Okay.
See, this is it. I reckon at some point, if only people had stopped calling the Nazis Nazis, everything would have been fine.
Of course they would have.
They would never
have really
turned
great.
My ancestors into lampshades. But...
Very nice lampshade.
Yeah, I mean, that was a stylish apartment. Let's not get it.
You know, they do have taste. But I've lost my friend. But the thing is that if we leave, we're fucked. And, you know, then we kind of have a situation where... They give us the things we need in terms of trade deals, but they make us also keep the things that we've actually said, well, we want to vote against that. We don't want open borders. Well, you can't have that without open borders. Yeah. It's not possible. So we actually end up with exactly the same position we were in before, but paying worse tariffs, probably having to contribute more to EU funds, and having lost the billions we've lost because of the uncertainty since.
And also no seat at the table. I think, Chris Betts, what Colossal Doug Siegel is telling us is that basically the EU is David Cameron's manhood and we are the pig.
Oh no!
I think it's forcibly entering our mouth.
And Canada is one of the diners at the table, just going, "I'll have another portion, please."
Yeah, because we kept our mouths shut. It's really interesting to be over here right now because it seems like the way that British people are dealing with it, the really hard like leave, but we want exactly what we want, is people that haven't come to terms with the fact that you're not an empire anymore.
Yeah.
People don't understand that you have to negotiate now and you can't just tell people what to do. And so I hate people to do this, but I really think not so much having your cake and eating it, but eating humble pie.
Right.
You need to accept that you have nothing to offer.
We're not a world power.
You have nothing.
Well, I posed this argument when Scotland was having its referendum, and I wrote an article saying, get over yourself, Scotland, which was basically like, I love Scotland. I lived there for 4 years. But don't be silly. You're not going to go it alone. And a lot of Scots were
like a good bet.
Scots were offended. Some Scots were offended by that article, but it was deliberately provocative to spark a debate. But in my defence, I now have the same argument for Britain. It's like, Britain, get over yourself. You're not that big. You're not that important. Yes, it's a great nation, and it does have some great economic strength. Lots of innovation here.
There's a lot of potential, but you guys don't do anything.
Very entrepreneurial culture, and it's also London and other great cities are very attractive to foreign investment, and it's not a bad place to live, is it, London town?
No, it's cool.
So, but, you know, we shot ourselves in the foot. Let's lighten the mood a little bit with a racist joke from Anton Deck.
I miss this.
So what happened is, I'm a Celebrity, biggest show on TV at the moment, and here's the joke. Basically, they face a backlash from Australians after branding Australians uncouth layabouts who barely wash. They just talked about the fact that there's a new leader in the TV show in the jungle, and that person's job is going to be to essentially lead a bunch of uncouth layabouts who barely wash, a reference to the people in the jungle, the celebrities.
Right.
And he said, yeah, basically it's the same kind of job as being Australian Prime Minister, as in Australian people are uncouth layabouts who barely wash. Is that joke racist, Chris Betts?
I guess what bothers me more is that it's not funny.
Yeah.
It's just hack. Yeah. It's just nonsense.
I wrote that joke. I wrote it.
Who writes for them?
I'm their chief writer. I fax it all over early in the morning. No, I don't know who writes for them, but that's the thing. Is that what it is? It's just a crime against comedy rather than
attitude? Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's just a really weak joke and kind of, it's at worst, a stereotype. I mean, it's like, you know, doing a hack thing about them being in manacles or something, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just
or am I continual goading you with moose references and guns?
It's
that sort of shite level of hack comedy.
I'm also going to say this, which is I think that Anton Deck are, you know, the most preeminent broadcasters, entertainment broadcasters. They're outstanding. They're brilliant what they do. I've met them, worked with them a number of times, and they are absolutely gentlemen, they're delight. However, I just wonder whether it's time to kind of channel John Maloney, the great comedian here, because whenever John Maloney gets heckled, he always goes, "There you go, ladies and gentlemen, comedy in the wrong hands."
Can I borrow your pen? I want to write that down.
And it's good, isn't it? And basically, I think Anton Deck are brilliant broadcasters, but occasionally, and I just, this is one perhaps moment where you can say, if a stand-up comedian who night in, night out has to judge an audience, and we've been burned so many times by remarks we've made, and that somebody that, whereas a TV presenter, it's always a roll of the dice for them, isn't it? Because
well,
they just don't know.
Chatting.
Yeah,
that's it. This is just back and forth chat. That's the kind of dumb thing that my friends
in
say
fairness.
In a bar. And then as soon as he says it, we all turn at him and go, "What an idiot!" He makes fun of my friend for saying it.
But yeah,
it's just
this is all
thing.
Very tightly scripted. That and that stuff, isn't
that
it?
That can't have been
so
scripted.
So I think, I think it would have been sadly,
really.
Yeah.
Oh,
so what we really need to do
writers.
Is hunt down which of our colleagues
get John
has
Maloney
written,
in there
and crucify them.
John Maloney,
publicly crucify
never
them.
A mistake. Obama and Putin barely brush palms. Does the handshake still matter? Does a handshake, does that happen as a thing in your lives, gentlemen?
Every day.
Here's a weird thing.
Go on then.
Abby came to collect me and I was munching on
a
salmon
here.
And a cream cheese bagel because I'm nothing if not a complete cliche. And I had a bit of cream cheese in my hand. I was like looking for something white. And she said, "Oh, I'll shake your hand afterwards." And that felt quite weird because it is so rare.
Yeah.
But I think possibly that's because we are namby-pamby showbiz people.
Right.
Because I'm sure, I mean, admittedly, it was a decade ago, but when I worked in business, people were always shaking hands.
I still shake hands with people all the time. Yeah. Maybe that's just me. Maybe people see me as a handshaker.
But what I'm confused about is I don't know when at which point the hug comes in.
When you know someone. Yeah, I only hug people that I actually want to hug.
Well, wait a minute. I would agree with you. I consider both of you friends, which I know is misinformed. But we're friends, therefore I hug both of you in a very sincere every way. Time. I've known you guys for quite a few years. Absolutely. And also we all do a job which is, you know, a challenge. So I find among comedians,
a fair thing to say,
there's a kinship there.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're fellow survivors, but
we've walked through the fire together.
Haven't we, love? And therefore, but no, for example, in a lot of the media now, people that don't know each other will hug for the initial.
That's weird.
That is
I'm not into that.
Have you not done that?
No.
Maybe I shouldn't have done that.
The
court case continues.
When you say hug, do you actually mean grab them by the pussy?
Yes, I do.
Yes, I thought so.
See, because I've been listening to President-elect Trump, and I've been taking his word literally.
People are starting to do that. Like, they're getting drunk and ironically grabbing each other by the pussy.
You're shitting me.
No, man. Like, you see it in, like in Soho, like, artsy people are like, I'm going to grab you by the pussy. And then they do it. And it's like, it's not funny. It's not funny to do it ironically. It's not funny to do it at all. But it's becoming weirdly normalized.
Anton Deck did it last night on live TV, and it just didn't work. Yeah.
And they were like, ah, oh, like a filthy Australian.
we need to find and publicly out and pillory their writers, don't we?
Well, I think we do.
We've
got to out them, and then we can take over and we can have a holiday in Australia.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, I can't imagine being in the outback with two funnier men than yourselves.
Oh, I can.
Have you met Gary Coleman?
Yeah.
Good point. I would like to sincerely, from the bottom of my heart, welcome. It's over. Welcome the end of the show and thank both of you being here. Can you believe, isn't it?
Yeah.
Doug Siegel.
Hello.
Social media following, please.
Oh, Doug _Siegel.
I love that's underscore. Some of my favourite people underscore.
Oh. Yeah.
Doug _Siegel.
That's my Twittery.
Do you think if they removed the underscore, the world would be over?
It wouldn't be over, but they'd probably find themselves talking to something like an IT exec in Arizona.
I think that's happening. Yeah. I'm also thinking, spare a thought for the backward slash, which gets so little publicity these days.
Yeah, really.
It's all about the forward slash.
It's all forward slash, never the backward slash.
And I don't think there's a problem with the backward slash, except racism.
It's the ginger of the punctuation world, isn't it? It's the last bastion of racism.
And there's a touch of ginger in Chris Betts' beard.
You're welcome.
That's why we love you.
Likewise.
Your social media handle, please.
Oh, Betts ain't funny.
Which is actually his Twitter handle. Yeah. And I'm pleased to say, as you've discovered in the last 60 minutes, the man is a master of irony. They are both total faves of mine. And you can catch them on the circuit. You can catch them on the radio. You can catch them everywhere. They obviously write for Antonek most of the time, so they're not normally here. I've been Mark Dolan. Many thanks to Abby and Adam for helping put the show together. We'll catch up next week. Keep it FUBAR. Don't go anywhere. We are playing out, by the way, with an English singer-songwriter called David Bowie. In the Heart of the Morning.
Heat of the morning, in the shadow I'll clip your wings, and I'll tell you I love you, in the heat of the morning, in the heat of the morning, in the shadow I'll clip your wings, and I'll tell you I love you. In the heat of the morning.